We're looking for Alpha in the NFC South. Let's hit the opening bell. It's Wednesday, August 21st. We're live from Dime Square, New York City. I'm Deep Value Better along with Throw the Damn Ball, Context Capper. We're back. Oh,
yeah. This is the favorite time of the season before you get into the grind, take a nice high level view, throw out some takes. Some of them are going to be egregious later on.
Yep. I think we're just fucking excited for some football.
I'm definitely not refreshed. I'm super excited for the season to get started, but at the same time, I actually wish we had another 3 months. I wish it was still May because there's just so much to build and we're just perpetually behind schedule. But we're ready to preview at least one division. I'm thinking we'll do maybe our four favorite divisions. I don't think we'll do every single division simply for the fact that in the next 10 days or so, people are already going to be previewing week one of the NFL season. So we'll probably do another two, maybe three. We'll see, but certainly not all eight. But let's jump in and set the stage for how the broader market is evaluating these teams, pricing this division as one of the worst in football. We see on the screen the consensus analyst preseason rankings. We took a poll across 22 different industry analysts, looked at their preseason rankings, aggregated them to get a sense of market expectations. And we can see that the best team in the division is expected to be the Atlanta Falcons. And they're still middle of the road, ranked at 16th. And that also has the widest range of distribution. So we can see from a volatility perspective, it's plus or minus 3.5 spots from that 16th. So the most disagreement from analysts is on the Falcons. The least amount of disagreement, the most consensus is on the Panthers, and that the Panthers are the worst in the NFL. And that's consistent across spreads, across futures, across a lot of different proxies. This is a consensus opinion across the board, which I think actually presents a little bit of opportunity. The Bucs and the Saints right there around a bottom 10 teams as well. Even though we know that the Bucs outperformed quite meaningfully last year, there is a lot of skepticism as we go into 2024.
Yeah, this is a extremely uncertain division. I don't think we know any of these teams are good. I think the Saints are probably the most known quantity. This is a pretty similar roster to what's been there for a couple of years. They've got a lot of kinds. Clint Kubiak, the new offensive coordinator, which I guess if he can inject some of that San Francisco magic, that can work. They are a team that got pretty unlucky in the results department, even though the fundamentals were basically the same as the Falcons of last season. But there's a lot of uncertainty here, and I like the Panthers a lot, I think, relative to expectation. Generally, when there is some consensus around what is naturally an uncertain position in terms of a quarterback going from year one to year two, they do develop. That is not usually projected accurately, and I think there is asymmetric upside from Bryce Young and the Panthers, where if he is what he was last year, the market's already priced appropriately. If he is something better, which let's not pretend the situation around him didn't get better, there is a chance that Dave Canales is the reason that Geno Smith is really good in staff. There's a chance that, like, oh, last year, by the way, Baker Mayfield was the worst quarterback in the NFL. All of a sudden, we're like talking about him as a mid-level quarterback, as this was known and obvious. And sure, Bryce Young was a disaster. Is it possible that Dave Canales is a great offensive mind? Absolutely. Is Deontay Johnson a great receiver in terms of his ability to separate? Also, yes. There are like real cases to be made that Bryce Young won't be as bad as he was last year. And if he's okay, and the market is saying we are certain that this is the worst team in the league, and if he's just, I don't know, below average, they are way underpriced relative to expectation. And that's what excites me in a division of kind of just meh.
That's also what I like about this division is expectations are just so low that there's a lot of room to the upside. The fact that there is uniform agreement that the Panthers are the worst team in the NFL and Bryce Young is the worst quarterback in the NFL, certainly the worst starting quarterback. But one of the things I just wanted to bring to the attention, seeing some data from the Panthers last season that gave some promise going into 2024. See on the screen here, NFL one possession wins and losses in 2023 with the teams from the NFC South highlighted to bring some emphasis of those teams of focus today. But we can see the Panthers, six losses in one possession games, only two wins. That's not the market perception that they were not a good team. Yeah, they were just getting crushed and blown out left and right. Now, they weren't scoring necessarily a lot of points. There were games that stuck out, as we'll get to it in a bit, but where Bryce did show flashes at times, and that's what you potentially want to capitalize on. If we didn't see that ever, not in any game, then I could potentially be a little bit more suspicious, but I saw enough to say that there's still runway for this quarterback to develop in this league where everyone's essentially written him off at this point.
You know, if in fact he is as bad as he was last year, you're talking about probably top three biggest busts of all time. Was the market that wrong about Bryce Young coming in? We've seen quarterbacks before that are maybe are mid or even a little better than mid have terrible first years. Even the great quarterbacks had bad first years. And based on the situation, to Judah's point, it's more probable that it was just a complete disaster year one. Everything's going to be a little more comfortable for everybody in the building and see what we get from Bryce, I think, through the start of the season.
I just want to narrow this point because I think it's also a very helpful frame for the discussion generally. It is not that necessarily we should throw out the sample. It's very valuable data. We haven't actually seen a quarterback as bad as Bryce Young come back before. It's just a matter of where's the asymmetry relative to markets lead us, right? It's all about what is currently priced. And then given that certainty that's priced in, is that legitimate? And do we have reasons to say that, no, actually that sample is not the most relevant one? We can point to some other curve, but it's all about relative to the context where the asymmetry lies. And I think that's like an important frame to keep in mind in this entire
situation. Love that. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And what I like is, again, there's a lot of change on this team. So that just increases the variance and gives you more opportunity to potentially be right on a skew to the upside. The other thing I want to point out too is, yes, everyone knows that the Panthers were bad last year, but a lot of people lost a lot of money betting on the Panthers. And I think there's a little bit of butthurt there. They came in with the expectation for about seven and a half wins. When it comes from an ATS perspective, the worst team in the league when it comes to a week by week spread betting perspective as well, even as expectations were downgraded, continued to not cover, covered at less than a 30% rate over the course of the season, right along with the Falcons, one of the worst ATS teams in the league. But again, some upside. We're looking at blown leads and comebacks over the course of the season. I feel like the expectation is that the Panthers weren't leading in any games, that they just were not a competitive team. They went 2-14. They just got doors blown off week in and week out. They led in seven games, but from a consensus preseason analyst rankings perspective, census worst team in the league. From a futures perspective, the expectation is 5.5 wins, about 2 wins short of where we were again a season ago. Big adjusted, it's about 5.7. That's a pretty big swing the last couple months. The big was priced to the downside in the past, now priced back into the upside. So there has been a bit of dip buying on the Panthers. And then we look at it, alt's curve implied win expectation, and that's about 5.7 wins as well. We'll get a little bit more into what that means in a few slides, but essentially it's one way to look at the entire win total futures curve, aggregating all of those different numbers and prices together, reverse engineering the base expectation from the sports book for their expected wins based on those prices. But there's a whole new coaching staff for this team. Also have Eric Eager, of course, the wild card, certainly going to move some numbers.
From Alphabet's season preview of the AFC West in 2023 to VP of the Panthers, a seamless transition.
Yeah, the fact that there's so many new pieces with a still young quarterback and a lot of transition from, this was a team that hung in a lot of games based on that defensive, and they've rotated a lot of that talent from the defense into the offense this year. So leaning into the offense, both from a draft perspective and from a free agency perspective, Deontay Johnson certainly won the premier offseason signings, helping provide a meaningful addition to the wide receiving core where Adam Thielen was your best and most potent option last year. And this provides some really nice diversification that can help elevate Bryce Young's performance this coming season. And then there's Dave Canales, of course. I'm uncertain exactly to what effect he's really going to bring. Again, the talk of the town is essentially, oh yeah, he brought Geno Smith back to life. He brought Baker Mayfield back to life. Now, can he bring Bryce Young back to life? I don't know if those quarterbacks' careers being resurrected was exclusively attributable to Dave Canales, and that for that in itself increases the probability of Bryce Young potentially bouncing back this year. I'm skeptical, or at least I have a higher uncertainty, I feel like, than the broader market has from that angle specifically, but it certainly doesn't hurt. At least
I'm going to push back the other way. The Bucs are 4-7, and we'll get to the Bucs later, but they were terrible early downs. They really put Baker in tough spots late. They couldn't run the ball. Canales has said that they're a running team, really emphasizing their running team, blah, blah, blah. And maybe that's just talk, but I wasn't super impressed with what he was doing. I was impressed with Baker, but as a holistic approach to offense and design, I'd like to see a little bit more of the first few weeks and get a taste of what he's going to be doing with offense before I make a declarative, this is what I think of him.
It's hard to argue one way or another. Like, Canales will be that. Will be this, Canales will be that. Right, there are obviously going to be many confounding factors. If you are building the narrative of how is Bryce Young successful, it's probably that Dave Canales is a very good offensive coach, and there's a massive delta between trotting out the corpse of DJ Chark versus Deontay Johnson, or like getting Xavier Leggett to be a real receiver. Jonathan Mingo was terrible last year. Yeah. It was a massive disappointment, right? If you get like some actual production there and you have a decent scheme, Bryce Young doesn't need to be that much, not be the worst offense. And there's a huge gap between being 32nd best, which undoubtedly Carolina was last year, and being 24th. Not just in terms of the expectations and from a futures perspective, but teams that are fundamentally 24th best could beat the Eagles in a playoff game and get very lucky through the course of a season. And like, really weird things can happen in the NFL, and you want to position yourself on the for the ability to have that variance. And when you're 32nd best, you don't get there. When you're just below average, there's at least a prayer. I will also just say on the defensive side of the ball, Elijah Everett seems to be a really good defensive coach. He's gotten a bunch of head coaching interviews. It's a team that way outperformed on the defensive side. And I think the kind of classic narrative right now surrounding Panthers is like, oh, they lost Brian Burns. I think Brian Burns is probably a pretty overrated edge player to begin with. He's middle of the pack in most efficiency metrics. And I would not overlook J.C. Horn coming back, who, while he has not stayed healthy, when he has been, has some of the best metrics in terms of his ability to prevent separation. I think he was like fourth in that category last year. And then his on-ball grade as well has been terrific. And that's a rare 1-2 combo to have in a corner. And I think, interestingly enough, he's been able to sustain it actually every year, which is really only true of him, Sauce Gardner, and Pat Surtain in terms of their consistency, which is an interesting kind of building block, especially if you want to look at it from a fantasy or even like early week SGPs of this potentially being a unit that wide receiver twos and secondary players are ripe to take advantage of. But I think this defense should be fine.
That's a good point, Judah, with J.C. Horn, especially in this division where I think your receivers on each of the other teams is pretty top heavy. Obviously, they have decent wide receiver twos, but if you can neutralize the Mike Evans, London, and Alave, I think that can help defenses take out the rest of the offenses here in this division in particular. So I know you're a Shahid truther, but
I was going to say it. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. And again, they have other options too, but it just that can help a defense just take out that number one.
And just looking at this team from a kind of broad perspective, there are some weak links everywhere. They don't have anyone that can rush the passer. If Davion Clowney's your number one at this point, that's a problem. And I am certainly of the belief that defensive coordinator is probably the most important asset for defense, and that can really elevate your players. And the guys we thought were no good turn out to have good seasons given the right context.
Another thing I want to bring to attention again to reinforce this theme that the Panthers potentially weren't as bad as the market perceived them to be last year. When we look from an earned drive points perspective, EDP, the core metric from our flagship drive quality model, when we look at unearned EDP, so the delta between the points that they actually scored and the points that they earned based on how drive quality evaluates their drive by drive basis, the Panthers were one of the unluckiest teams in 2023. The second most unlucky team, they earned 35 and a half more points than they actually scored, which is just another proxy of communicating that this team played better on the field than their actual results implied. Another metric here is EDP lost to turnovers. Certainly luck can be a huge element of that. And they were nearly a top 10 team when it comes to earned drive points lost to turnovers. So if you have an offense that can come back on turnovers and you get a little bit of a swing of the pendulum from the luck gods, just that in itself could potentially meaningfully improve some of your outcomes relative at least to last season. And another thing that we're looking at too is how teams performed in the Circa Millions contest. Another proxy for just broader, better perception, better performance. And as we showed before, Panthers were one of the worst teams in the league when it comes to an ATS perspective. Went 5-11-1 in the Circa Millions contest. On average, they're almost a full touchdown underdog on a week-by-week basis. They were the preferred side in any given matchup 35% of the weeks. And when the broader market did side with the Panthers, they only covered 11% of the time. Some interesting statistics here as well, just to see how sentiment shifts over the course of the season, then how the broader market perceives a team, digests the information on a week by week basis, and how they reprice a team over the course of a season. When we look into the 2024 season, something that we talked a little bit about in our past pod, talking about how we're evaluating strength of schedule. So the traditional approach is looking at the expected win totals for all their opponents, doing an aggregation and getting a proxy of how difficult a team's schedule may be. We've demonstrated that is a pretty wishy-washy approach. One of the reasons why Jude and I have talked a lot about in past previews, why it's very difficult to project on a week-by-week basis what could potentially be a good bet from a spread perspective, because just so many things can change on a week-by-week basis of a season. Zach and I talked about last week how if you played the Bears in the front half of the season, they were one of the easiest pushovers over the course of the season. But if you played in the second half of the season, they're a meaningfully better team, meaningfully adjusted, made some roster changes. Matt Eberflus took over the defense. They made some trades. And that was a top five defense, top 10 overall team in the second half of the season. So very difficult to evaluate using that sort of approach. One thing that is consistent, that is roster independent, that is power rating independent, is looking at the situation of that schedule. That is not going to change over the course of the season. These are facts. And what we did was look at how different teams' rolling rest advantages, what kind of cross-country trips may they be taking on, their consecutive road trips, and looking at a whole bunch of different variables and then evaluating how those variables fit relative to all schedules going back to 1999. And then looking at how difficult is any given schedule relative to that historical sample. And so we're looking at the Carolina Panthers on the screen now, and we can see that from a situation modeling perspective, they have the eighth easiest. They have a plus 6 days net rolling 3 week rest advantage. They have two cross country trips, two road trips, a road trip being defined as any back to back road game. And they have two games that really stick out as meaningful rest advantage games, something that our research implies has the same benefit as a bye week. And that comes in week 12 versus the Chiefs and week 13 versus the Bucks. Meaningful rest advantages for the Panthers there, again, equivalent to a bye week. So those are the games that I would say I would specifically star. But other than that, I don't think there's anything super meaningful to take away from looking at the schedule moving forward.
Talk all you want about all these other stuff. Ultimately, what's going to matter here is Are we getting the 2023 version of Bryce Young, or is there some unlocked version of him that we don't know? And that is so clearly the central question for the Panthers. They've even made that clear. They hired the quarterback whisperer. They went out and traded for Deontay Johnson. They went out and drafted Xavier Leggett. They drafted Jonathan Brooks. They have tried to make it the central question of, is Bryce Young our guy or not? They've set it up that way. I think we should be setting it up that way. It's really the only question that matters to the Panthers in 2024.
Yep. I agree with that.
When we look at their full alt futures curve here, we see anywhere from 3.5 wins out to 9.5 wins, plus 750 to make the playoffs, plus 1300 to win the division. Anything across this curve where you feel like there's the most value to extract?
If Bryce Young is really the 24th best quarterback, and this is a Panthers team that is really 2 points worse than a regular team on a neutral, I want to be betting into that every week, rather than just embrace this, oh, are the Panthers going to win 7 games? Because again, I really think it's a Bryce Young question, and that's the angle that I want to be betting the Panthers this year and not introducing any other unnecessary variables.
But again, even if Bryce Young is as bad as he was last year, first of all, I don't think he can be as bad as he was last year. One, because the situation around him is stronger, is a better setup this year than it was last year. Again, I talked a lot about at the beginning how the Panthers weren't even as bad on the field as the final box scores and the final standings.
Their win total isn't 2.5, right? Their win total is still 5.5. There is still building in some room for that, right? It's not as though their results from last year are being directly translated into market pricing now. That's the only reason I push back on that.
The 5.5, too, though, is almost historically low, especially given at least the juice at the beginning of the summer has essentially priced it at 4.5. So it has swung about a full game. So you could say a little bit of value has been extracted. But if you're going to win 4 games, again, 2 games is like a huge outlier. If you're going to be one of the if you're going to be the worst team in the league, you're probably going to win 4 games. The Broncos were, I think, the 10th worst team last year, and they won 8 or 9 games. So if this team is Broncos level, you're basically hitting almost the top ceiling of their alts.
Yeah. I think that's the point I was making earlier about if you were the 32nd best team, you do not allow yourself the chance to variance your way into an 8 or 9 win season. But I don't want to be betting that. Oh, I don't know.
People want futures bets.
Yeah. You got to be compelling here. You can't just give out picks and takes.
You can't just say wait and see.
Yeah. Let's use reason and logic.
Gun to your head, Judah. Come on. The people want bets, man. Give it to
What's
them.
Your bet, no, Zach? What's your bet,
nothing,
Zach?
There's nothing we can point to. There's nothing we can point to and say, ah, this is something in Bryce Young's data which suggests that your two is going to look different. Or there's something in Bryce Young's film in particular which you're going to say, given new circumstances in year two, there's good evidence to say he's going to do that. It's more a blind kind of fate, like it's something this isn't capturing, and players get better, and I don't know where that's coming from. By virtue of saying that and not, hey, here is, you know, like X quarterback struggled when under pressure but was really good when he was kept clean, and there's good reason now to believe he's going to be kept clean more, and therefore he's a good bet in your team. We don't have that here. He's bad in every category.
Oh, but also, the other thing is what we've talked about in the past, and again, this is certainly at the lower end of this kind of distribution, but the theory still holds in the sense of quarterback coming into year two, having a better wide receiver at his disposal. Again, Deontay Johnson's not no Jamar Chase, but those variables still set up. And also, again, with a new coaching staff, with supposedly a more offensively minded, certainly more modern than Frank Reich. Those are some variables that are very attractively set up, where that is in itself enough evidence to bet on edge cases to the upside.
So that's that. Yeah, I think to me, I see that as enough evidence to effectively say the certainty that is being priced into the market is misguided. But it is not enough to trigger a bet of saying, no, I actually think the market has this wrong, not the market is wrong on its uncertainty. And I think there's a distinction there. And that's what there's some difference in whether or not I want to place futures bet, as opposed to just, I think the general direction of where the market's at is wrong. Because I can't confidently say, I know it's going to go this way. It's just that I'm confident that they're confident.
Can Bryce Young win Comeback Player of the Year because he was so awful?
I thought they adjusted the language on how that award is won, and you can't come back from sucking.
It would be, and that might actually be the best.
But you should, because that is a good comeback. Because also sometimes you sucking, I feel like Bryce Young would actually be a great example of a true comeback player, because so many variables around him changed. He performed bad last year. It was his rookie year. It wasn't a great setup. Bad offensive line. Again, like your best wide receiver is Adam Thielen. Boomer coach. Just wasn't set up for success. Certainly more favorably set up for success this year. And even though he wasn't injured or anything like that, I feel like he is certainly eligible for being, even if not for the award, certainly for all practical purposes, being a comeback player of the year.
It also would be shocking because I think to Judah's point earlier, it would be almost unprecedented because of just how bad he was last year to have that kind of transformation. So it actually would probably prove to Judah's point that kind of tailwind of Canales is actually maybe a quarterback whisper after all. So
when we look at the Panthers, again, alts, features, curve, again, you can see how all the different prices wobble here across the curve, both from an over and unders perspective. You can see the fattest spread is between 6 and 8 from an unders perspective. So this linear model saying, here's what the odds should be for these prices, and here's what they actually are. And there's just a huge fat tax to bet Panthers under 6, under 7, under 8, under 9. All of those are being mispriced to your disadvantage. So nothing to take advantage of there. The sliver of potential advantage, again, if you buy into this broader concept, is betting the Panthers over right around 6.5, 7.5 alts is where the most value would be.
Yeah.
And that's plus 172, 6.5, plus 270, 7.5. So if we're forced to make a bet here, all right, to provide just for pure entertainment purposes, what's your bet? What's your bet, Zach? I'll let you know, since he's very.
I'm going to just go where the perceived value seems to be, which would be the over 7. I don't think they're really going to get there. So I'm fine taking the over 6.5. Because again, I think this is a very weak division generally. I think the Bucs overperformed wildly last year down the stretch. I think Saints might be a little better. So to me, to Judah's point earlier, it's basically an open division. We don't really know how good or bad any of these teams really are. Can Panthers win 3-4 division games? Then you're 2-3 games away from being right there. I think 6.5, I'm fine taking the over.
I absolutely despise making a futures bet here. I would take the division. You could probably launch out a better number, honestly. Absolutely made me pick something. It's that. And I'm selling the rest of the teams. This gets into basically the Bucs scenario of last year. I think fundamentally my 24th best team in the league, but just lucked their way into a division.
So let's talk about the Saints. Again, expectations, 7.5 wins. Big adjusted, 7.8 wins. Juiced a bit to the upside. Alts curve implied right at that 7.8 as well. Dennis Allen returns as head coach. Got new OC, Clint Kubiak. Don't know if that necessarily brings any sort of pizzazz or explosiveness to this offense. I feel like there's some meaningful downside to the Saints. Hate this roster. I know you loved the Saints last year, Judah.
I thought last season we had decent quarterback. And again, this was also definitely division specific. When the Falcons had Ritter, the Panthers did not particularly look like a good team, and neither did the Bucs. But it was almost like the stability they offered, you can kind of make it for the Falcons this year. I see those two in very similar lights, albeit I think the Falcons probably a better situation. All that is to say, this was a defense that had plenty of talent, but was very old. You got guys like Cam Jordan, Tyrann Mathieu, Marshawn Lattimore, and it was almost like, can these guys keep it together one more year in a division that seems to be bad? And it's just like all of the cases are just a little bit worse because these guys are a year older. They had some attrition on the defensive side of the ball. I love Rashid Shaheed. I love Chris Olave. His offensive line is an absolute disaster. Trevor Penning has been horrible. Starting a rookie at left tackle. They're weak links up the wazoo here. Derek Carr is not anyone's idea of a quarterback who's going to elevate people around him. Dennis Allen is just, don't know how he still has a job. We're looking at a team that is, defense is holding on for dear life with age and injury. Yeah. I think the only upside case you can make is Clint Kubiak is coming from the Niners. It's almost like the Sean McVay phenomenon of, oh, this guy breathed on Sean McVay. Let me try and hire him. And see magic. Maybe he's the next guy. And like, it's possible. Sure. Definitely possible. But it's not exactly something I'm willing to.
So I agree with all that. And that's why I think this team, to both your guys' points, I think this team is ready to implode, or we're going to get a surprise to the upside. Like, it's really, I don't think they're going to land in the middle. I think
what's the upside case?
I'll give you, I think Clint Kubiak gives this offense like where they ended last year, which was using a Taysom Hill in the red zone. And they basically went from bottom five offense in the red zone to top 10 the last 7 weeks or so. And so they're going to realize that Derek Carr is like the worst quarterback in NFL history in the red zone, and that their best bet in short yardage and specific packages is to protect him, bring Taysom Hill in, do the gimmick stuff a little bit here and there, and just play that style of game. Now, to your point, the defense obviously is like a year older. They have holes everywhere. But again, the division's so weak. They're the same team with a little bit of a better offensive coordinator. To me, I lean towards the upside. So
we still haven't gotten into what's the upside. You told me about red zone.
Yeah, just improving their red zone offense a little bit, I think, especially in this division. That could be enough to pick up two or three wins going from a 7-win team to 10-win team. It's not a huge upside, but it's better than, I think, where their total is right now at 7.5.
Yeah, I would just push back on if the wins is not, you can't just keep everything constant from the rest and then just be like, oh, this is all constant, we're going to add the red zone play. Not to mention that red zone play is itself unstable, and I wouldn't lean much in a small sample.
Hold on one second. I disagree specifically for the Saints, and because we know a constant, which is Derek Carr is not good historically in the red zone, and we know also Taysom Hill opens up the offense. And so just that fact alone and how they didn't utilize that in the first half and then did utilize it and saw a big change, not saying that's going to repeat, but from an upside perspective, I think as long as they lean into that direction of things and don't let Derek Carr put everything on his shoulders, they'll have a better chance at least of being a little more successful.
I just want to push on this point. That's a very narrow part of the game, though. Right, your ability to improve in the red zone, how are you getting there? How is this offense, performing?
Your boys, Olave, Shahid.
I don't see any upside here. I can't.
It's honestly,
the best you can give me is that Taysom Hill is going to improve their red zone play. I think it tells you all you need to know.
It's not good, but it's a weak division.
It's a weak division, and they did have one of the realized easiest schedules last year. And still couldn't go over their win total. According to unearned EDP, we're one of the luckiest teams last year. Also lucky from an EDP loss to turnovers perspective. So what that's telling you is when they did turn the ball over, they didn't even earn a lot of points when they did so, turned over the ball more so when it was more advantageous to them. The eighth ranked defense certainly was helping up a lot of them from an EDP perspective, allowing 1.6 points per drive. Even with Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, and again, there was some injuries, but the 23rd most explosive team from an explosive drive rate perspective. So getting a 20-yard play on a drive only 26% of the time. And certainly having those weapons at your disposal, not taking advantage of them. And I'm not of the belief that Clint Kubiak is going to meaningfully improve that. Unless we see Spencer Rattler this year. I really like Spencer Rattler. Again, he's a huge wild card. I feel like the distributions on him are like super wide, but he's got that skew to the potential upside that I feel like is super attractive, especially with these weapons. Even last year, everyone was clamoring to get some Jameis Winston just to be able to take the top off some of the defenses and really unlock some of the potential of this offense. Because Derek Carr just is not doing it.
He's a manager.
Also, Spencer Rattler is a gambler. Again, like Jameis Winston. But I think smarter than Jameis Winston, which obviously is not a very high threshold. But I think it would be super fun and exciting to see Spencer Rattler, especially if this team just sucks right off the bat, Dennis Allen is the favorite to be the first head coach fired. How can you be priced at 7.5 wins, skewed to the upside, more so towards 8, when your coach is expected to be the most likely coach fired? How do you get fired unless you're literally imploding in the beginning of the season? So I think at least that sets up nicely, potentially see some fun single game performances here. Again, if we start to get some roster turnover here and Spencer Rattler gets some airtime, I think that could be fun to see.
I think your bringing up of Spencer Rattler's airtime is a very compelling point for why I like the Saints to score the fewest points in the NFL at 40-1. Which is, I can see this as a team that completely, they've been like in cap hell for the last 10 years of just like kicking the can down the road,
It's coming loose.
And I can see this as, this is an offense which certainly is going to try and run the ball a lot, play a very slow style of offense. And if Carr's bad early, they have every incentive to pull the plug and go to Rattler. And I see that as...
I don't know if they have every incentive because they've already paying him so much money.
Yeah, a little bit of Russell Wilson effect.
Derek Carr.
You can get out of that contract. You also are like not going to be... If you are stuck in this spot of, we've now entered year 3 here, he's got nothing. They drafted Rattler for a reason.
I don't think it happens unless Dennis Allen gets fired.
That's what I'm saying. What Saints start 0-4. Okay. They clean house. Their offensive line's an absolute train wreck. You've got a quarterback from Spencer Rattler, who, by the way, I'm not even sure is going to be the second quarterback. He's like battling it out right now. He takes a ton of sacks. He's like right up there in the Justin Fields pressure to sack rate. Not exactly a category you want to be in. Now, you can overcome that. Joe Burrow also had an extremely high pressure to sack rate in college, and especially if he's going to be chucking deep balls to our guys. But if the offensive line's a disaster, Spencer Rattler is not exactly, he's still a late round pick. If he's bad and there's like really very little talent around him on an already attached to a slow offense, I can just see the rails falling off for this team. They're throwing out an overmatched rookie because why not? I see a massive left tail here. I don't think there's a case we made for the right tail.
No, I don't see right tail. And again, there is signal in the Dennis Allen being favorite coach to be fired first. That is implying that this is very prone to being a terrible team fast.
Yeah, implosion.
This is a team that is like projected middle of the pack in terms of their scoring output. We know they're going to be slow, which is going to matter a lot. And they're 40-1. I'm seeing on FanDuel. I imagine that's the best number you can get. I think this is like 2-3% likely here.
This is the other thing too. Again, from a situation-based schedule perspective.
0-4.
Hardest 90th percentile difficulty when it comes to situation-based variables. From a net rolling 3-week rest advantage, one of the worst in the league, negative 15 days, 4 games where, again, is the equivalent of facing an opponent coming off a bye week. 4 games. And that's worth about a point. Okay, so again, a lot of other variables that could potentially be going into play during those specific weeks, but those are situation-based variables that are negative that have proved to be something that wanes on performance. And so those games are week 11 versus the Browns, week 15 versus Washington, week 16 versus the Packers, and week 17 versus the Raiders. So there's a string of games near the tail end of the season where they're going to be playing some very situationally difficult games. So I think just another element that feeds in to this team performing potentially very poorly.
To start the season, they start with the Panthers, and then they play Cowboys, Eagles, Falcons, Chiefs before they play a division game with the Bucks. It's very possible this team's 1-4 heading into that game with the Bucks. And if they lose that game, you're looking at a potential 1-5 team. So if we're talking about Dennis Allen being fired, and that sounds like a really good left tail bet. Are the Saints firing him at week 7 when they're 1-5? Right? If that plays out, is that the pull the plug moment?
Their weeks 3, 4, 5 games are just asking for
An ass kicking?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it actually is a nice setup, again, to accentuate any potential underperformance.
And if they,
especially early.
Yeah. If they lose to Carolina week one.
Oh, God.
Already a little bit.
Give up, everybody.
Bryce Young, 300 yards, 3 touchdowns.
For what it's worth.
Yeah.
They also play the Cowboys in Dallas week two.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's it's not. Just like this. You can start 1-4. 0-4 here.
Yeah.
I like this a lot. I'm seeing, by the way, Justice pricing is 25-1 on this fewest point score. Market at worst team.
Well, what makes me worried about the least value. Points element is if we're saying like this could be again a bad defense as well. Do you potentially have more opportunities to score? And then if again there is at least some marginal improvement from Clint Kubiak, plus if you think Dennis Allen's gonna get fired, it just increases the variance there of you still have Chris Olave being an elite wide receiver, the nice 1-2 punch with Rashishi. Again, it's priced at a deep discount. It's not saying this team is likely to be the least points scored. But the one thing I don't like about it is essentially if the thesis starts to come to fruition around this team starting to implode, that is actually a catalyst for a potential rebound.
I think the play here is that like Rattler is overmatched. Time out. Spencer Rattler's quarterback week one. Your projections for the New Orleans Saints off. Or should they?
I think they're probably like Panthers.
I'll reject that possibility. I can also say that conditional on getting to that possibility, that means that they were terrible. But it's also not...
It's a weird hypothetical too, though, because if Spencer Rattler was QB1 week one...
Derek Carr like just scored this year.
Yeah, I just feel like that in itself almost gives Dennis Allen a longer leash.
Well, I don't think Dennis Allen's presence is like so determinative here.
Yeah. So I mean, if we had to book a bet on the Saints, I'm gonna take the first head coach to be fired. That's my.
What's the price?
What was it? Is that favorite? So it's probably what, like 6-1, something like that.
So you just like it no matter what the price.
It's theoretical betting, right?
+300.
Oh, no, never mind. Sorry. It's a little too...
Oh, I thought you
I
were...
I mean, that is insane. That's almost like, it's almost a slam dunk. For sure he's going to be fired.
He's getting fired.
First of all, it's also not just that Dennis Allen's going to be fired. He's the first coach fired.
Yeah, that's a tough sell. So who else, real quick, who are the top 3 or 4 coaches that we think are fired in season this year, like options? So Dennis Allen...
Jets, Giants.
Salah. If Rodgers is healthy, it seems unlikely they're going to go.
Salah's +700.
Oh. Who else? So we have Salah.
But actually, he's the third. He's the third most likely.
If you're talking about coaches who, like, if things go wrong, will get fired.
Yeah.
Like, I think Cincinnati's a sneaky one.
No.
Jacksonville.
Even if they went 0-7, I don't think they would have to. That. Yeah, I don't think they would do it. Not in season.
Jacksonville's an interesting one.
Oh, I don't see him in the top 10, and he should be like number 2.
Yeah,
really? You think
Peterson? I think Jacksonville's a good one.
Yes, Peterson is.
No, but you're but, still but tough. One, years one. Ago, but contextualizing that,
there's some from last year too.
Yeah, true.
But what happened with Urban Meyer? I feel like they're less likely to jump the gun on Peterson, like at least in season, because they have a recent comparison to be like that was awful.
They also have the rest of the league.
Yeah, but I don't think they do it in season. What is the benefit, really?
Why? If their coach is bad and they're like, hey, we got to get this guy out.
No, in fact, if I was the Jags, I would actually be very prone to firing because you can't just let Trevor Lawrence's career and rookie contract. You can't just waste games, waste seasons.
Yeah,
but again, I'm telling you that Urban Meyer experience, I think, left a taste in the mouth. I'm just saying for the
team. Peterson being first.
Any evidence for that?
I'm just saying psychologically. It's just like if you have a bad relationship, the next relationship you have might actually appear to be better than it is just because of that previous one. These are humans. Though they underperform,
I just don't know what you're saying right now.
So I'm saying as far as likelihood to be fired in season, I mean, we're saying what Jags would have to lose the first 5 in a row to be that they would can them. I don't even know if they would.
I think if they start 0-3, they fire him.
Really? No, it's not 0-3. Maybe
you 0-5. Cannot waste Trevor Lawrence.
They were a disaster last year. They should have been.
I feel like there's already so many bonehead coaching mistakes that are directly attributable to his decision making.
But I'm saying it doesn't mean that the ownership's gonna see it that way. That's all.
I agree.
You have evidence of them firing a coach midseason. There are certain teams that do not fire their coach midseason. The Jaguars are not one of them. I think that's the only evidence.
I just wonder if Urban was so bad that they give Peterson a longer leash. That's it.
These are just vibes.
Hey, we vibe, baby. That's how we do it.
Context Capper does have good gut feels, I have to say.
That's why they hate me.
Mike McCarthy, by the way, is the second.
Oh, yeah. To me, that's a little more palatable if Cowboys, for some reason, shit the bed. Mm.
All right, to close the door on the Saints, we look at the All Futures curves, and there's really no value anywhere to be found. So there's a fat tax on betting Saints. Unders, under 8.5, under 9.5, under 10.5, all being overly taxed. And then just fair odds on betting Saints over, so maybe a sliver of value on 8.5. Again, just from a fair pricing perspective, not from a handicapping perspective. So again, if we're forcing the hand for entertainment purposes, what are we taking?
I think I'll take... Shit.
All right, we got 5.5 all the way out to an 11.5 curve.
I'm taking under 5.5. I illustrated the case. I think the wheels can come off very quickly. And then they can very quickly enter a rebuild. And if the Spencer Rattler or whomever is their backup quarterback was starting week one, their win total will be 5.5.
Yeah.
And there are other circumstances in which Spencer Rattler is not the quarterback. The wheels don't fall off and they still hit 5.5.
Yeah.
A bad defense. An offense with a completely mediocre quarterback, a disastrous O-line. And by the way, a quarterback really requires a really good system to be successful.
True.
This is not a guy who can create on his own. He's a function of the structure around him. And if that crumbles down, this offense is bad. I see many cases really bad.
Yeah, I hate that opening schedule for them, and with the favorite to be fired first, I think I'm comfortable going under 6.5.
Yeah, the under 5.5 is only plus 330. Hmm. Alrighty, let's go on to the Bucks.
Super Bowl champions.
Context Capper, the Bucks Whisperer, self-proclaimed.
Yeah, is it in the
But there is some evidence to that. There is some.
How
evidence.
Do you? How
that
do
is
you
anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, there's one deer. What's up?
I'm wondering how you get the vibes of the Bucks, considering they've gone through a lot of changes. Right there's the
He's birthed from Jerry Springerland.
Yeah.
Bestial South.
Yeah, I was a little more bullish on Baker, I think, than the market last year. Again, everyone was writing him off as the worst quarterback in the NFL, which is not fair. That's not the case. The thing with the Bucs is I think last year they weren't actually that good, and they lucked into some victories and then into the playoffs and had a good game versus the Eagles, obviously, in the playoffs, who were also fading down the stretch. So I don't trust this team this year. If people are buying the Bucs, I'm okay selling them. I think their offenses might actually be slightly improved without Dave Canales. So to me, you're keying on the new OC and how he especially works on early downs, and how is Baker performing in this year two of the Bucs. If Baker is what he was last year, as far as just confidence, consistency, I think the Bucs could be a mid-team, but I don't really see much upside beyond that. So
from a drive quality EDP perspective, bottom 10 offense last year, bottom 10 defense, average explosive drive rate. And that was one of the things that really helped them last, especially on third downs, was explosive plays. But from an explosive drive rate perspective, was just middle of the road. The third most lucky team from an unearned EDP perspective, also lucky from a turnovers perspective. 29th in EDP lost to turnovers. So when they turned the ball over, it was at the most convenient time. Terrible on scripted plays. You know, one of the worst in the league. There's a lot of hints from last year that this team meaningfully outperformed, and that if all things equal, this team is going to be worse this year.
This is why I'm not in love with Dave Canales, is because last year the offense was just bad. And I honestly, it seemed like Baker bailed them out consistently, late on downs, big explosive plays to Mike Evans. And one thing I want to pose to you guys is, if Mike Evans didn't sign back with the Bucks and they don't have him as their number one, though he's getting old, how would you feel about this offense going into this season, right? Regardless of the OC, I just don't see a lot of promise anywhere you look on this team.
Yeah, I think this is like a classic case. And Brett, we've definitely talked about this in the past, of like the taste that was left in bettors' mouths. is like them coming out with a surprising win against the Eagles and then like not playing with the Lions in the divisional round. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a close game and oh, they're a good team. Like, fundamentals were not that, both in terms of like their output stats and also Zach, to your point of just like the how much third down and then Baker into the deep ball to Mike Evans bailed them out. And for what it's worth, I think that the kind of run pass is a Todd Bowles function, that we saw that even with Brady.
Pretty true.
Unless the Canals, but that's not going anywhere. And I think just like really taking a high level view and saying this team was a below average offense. Their defense that was so good 3-4 years ago is a shell of that. They really have very little talent on the back end. They are like a Mike Evans injury away from really having no one to throw to. The interior of this offensive line is a disaster. I just see this as probably, and I agree with you. I thought the like last season coming in, oh, Baker's the worst quarterback was nonsense. He was pretty good his rookie year. He was really good his third year. He had a lot of shoulder issues. He's playing through a major injury. Like, he's never as bad as his worst years. He probably wasn't as good as last year. The truth lies somewhere in between. And that's what the market's pricing. And they're in a bad division, so it's going to give it some juice. But like, no one's under any illusions, I think. Like, this is a really good team.
Yeah, I think some interesting data, just from a Circa Millions contest analysis perspective, Bucks went 10-7 in the contest record. Okay, but like the market did not have a good pulse on this team, when to buy, when to fade. So they're the preferred side in any given matchup, 60% of the time, only covered 35% of those times. And we can see on the chart on the right, on a week-by-week basis, whether the team covered or not, and the underlying volume, essentially how popular of a pick they were. And anytime the market started to get any conviction in betting the Bucks, they failed to cover. And anytime the market was selling off on the Bucks, they did end up covering. Anytime the market exceeded 25% support for the Bucks, they failed to cover. And some of their biggest spread covers were when they were the least popular pick in the contest. Something interesting, certainly, for the Bucks last year.
I'd highlight these roster changes here. The defense still was stable. They lost a lot of key cogs. And like, Devin White's a pretty controversial linebacker. He hasn't graded out particularly well. As you see, his floor was negative here. Shaq Barrett is a good pass rusher. Carlton Davis has struggled with health over the years, but is still a serviceable corner. Like, he still lost a lot of guys. There's not a lot of
anytime Carlton Davis was out, like, that was always like a red flag for betting the Bucks.
It's just, there's not a lot left. DeVea is still a force on the interior, but it's really weak links on the rest outside of like Antoine Winfield essentially at safety.
And Chancey, the rookie last year, and Todd Bowles likes this anyways. They're gonna have the middle shored up as far as like stopping the run, and then when they play the CJ Strouds of the world, they're gonna get burned heavily. So I think keying on that again this year probably makes a lot of sense.
And this is a team that struggled to defend explosive plays last year. This is a very fragile defense.
So Baker has to carry the team and score more points. Good for fantasy.
Bottom five and explosive pass plays allowed. No reason why that couldn't be directionally right again this year.
Yeah, from a schedule situation perspective, one of the easier ones, but there is some yellow flags. 3 road trips on the season. So 3 situations where they have back-to-back road games. Net rolling 3-week rest advantage of -5 days. 1 cross-country trip. But a host of other factors involved in this model ultimately spits out still one of the easier schedules from a situation perspective. From the futures curve perspective, it goes from 5.5 out to 11.5. 7.5 being that middle range. 8.1 wins is the futures curve implied win total. +350-ish to win the division. 35-1 to win the conference. 90-1 win the Super Bowl. Anything to get out to you here from a betting perspective, certainly on the alts?
I think they were 5.5 last year, weren't they? I would consider going under 5.5 because, kind of to Judah's point, and you could say this about a lot of teams.
5.5 +340.
Yeah, that's okay. If Baker gets hurt, you want to talk about bad backup quarterbacks. They have Kyle Trask. He's pretty awful. So if Baker gets hobbled at all, which I think he got hobbled.
Baker, because Baker stayed uncanny healthy.
Yeah, he gets nicked up because he runs a little bit. If Evans goes down or Baker is hobbled for a while, this could be Todd Bowles last year in Tampa too. So I wonder if he's the first coach to be fired.
That's an interesting one.
Oh, under. Yeah, when we look at the futures curves, and this is the first curve that I've seen from both the over and under perspective where there is absolutely no implied value. So pretty much just juiced across the curve with no even theoretical implied value.
Love the juice. Yeah, 6.5 feels a little safer for this type team because their schedule is pretty soft. Squeezing out an extra game or two versus soft competition could be more palatable.
All right, let's go on to the Falcons, the team everybody loves. Wow. Loved them last fall, too. And that was a much easier fade.
God, that was easy.
I mean, I felt like the arguments for his name even slips my mind now since he's on the verge of being out of the league.
Desmond Ridder. How can
that there
you
was
forget
any
him?
Sort of outrageously bullish arguments for him to exceed wildly expectations and to lead this team into the playoffs fell flat on its face.
I think that it might be largely driven to a degree because of fantasy. I don't know how much social media has an effect on betting markets directly. I can't quantify any of that, but at least from the broader just sentiment, there's just so much buzz around Bijan Robinson and Arthur Smith's running the ball and obviously Kyle Pitts' resurgence with London, etc., weak division, all that. But the quarterback is the most crucial piece, and he was the worst quarterback in the NFL. So those pieces never added up to me. Awful.
But I mean, there was even evidence to suggest that he sucked.
Yeah. Like,
there was no evidence to suggest the contrary or that anything would be meaningfully different from the past. No,
in fact, right. I feel like there is far more evidence this offseason that there is upside for a quarterback like Bryce Young as opposed to the stupid optimism for Desmond Ridder last offseason. This is just anecdotal, but I've not even come across any Panthers fans who have some sort of deranged upside fantasy of how Bryce Young could potentially perform this season. Expectations are just so in the gutter for the Panthers. Anyway, we're talking about the Falcons, but I feel like it is a decent parallel at least. But now we have Kirk Cousins. Of course, the expectations, 9.5 wins, 10.1 big adjusted. So being super juiced to the upside, alts curve implied in between at about 9.8. Again, that analyst consensus preseason rank is somewhat in the middle, around 16. Totally new coaching staff, new play callers across this entire division. Raheem Morris, head coach, bringing along with him, seems like the entire staff that was at least surrounding him in LA and bringing Zach Robinson along with them.
Gotta give a shout out to PFF Zach, guy who started there and was on McVay Prodigy. I think he and Bobby Sloak together in Cincinnati doing their thing. Certainly comes from an analytical school of thought, that is for sure. I'm not saying he is going to be Bobby Sloak, but a lot of very similar parallels considering their backgrounds.
From an EDP perspective, last season, defense performed pretty well, top five, offense, middle of the road, one of the luckiest teams in the league. Rhymes with a lot of what we're talking about from the Bucs perspective as well. Not a very explosive team, 19th in the league from an explosive drive rate perspective, getting a 20-yard pass or run on any drive 28% of the time. That number can go up exceedingly this year. I feel like a lot of that excitement that was for this team last year that was misplaced can actually come to fruition in 2024. Really unlock some of that bottled up potential from someone like Kyle Pitts, like Drake London. Certainly, Bijan Robinson, from a fantasy perspective, be the most explosive player.
I would push back a little bit here. To set the context, even before I make any point, the Falcons should absolutely rightfully be division. And whereas last year I thought the Saints were in a similar spot, the Saints were plus 130, the Falcons are minus 145. But I would say that there is this, some notion that Falcons have this awesome supporting cast. They have these great offensive weapons. Kyle Pitts was incredible in year one. Absolutely. No denying it. He's also been bad for 2 years. Is it possible that was a function of some weirdness of Arthur Smith? Yeah. Did Jonnu Smith also have a really great year at tight end for the Falcons last year? Also, yes. And there's this fantasy narrative of like, ooh, Arthur Smith is tanking Kyle Pitts. Is it true? Maybe. The best players, if they're really...
But he definitely did mismanage Bijan Robinson.
Sure. But I think that's a matter of workload and running back stuff. I don't think that managing Bijan Robinson properly is the difference of unlocking this offense. I just think the point is a great supporting cast. Kyle Pitts was not great enough to transcend bad coordinators. If he was really good, if he was really this elite player, he probably would have done that. Drake London? Good player. We don't really know that much. It's a lot easier to put up good numbers when you are the only wide receiver on your team. And you want to look at stats like yards per route run when your team is only running two wide receiver sets. You're like biased to stats like that. In terms of his underlying play, he profiles a pretty solid receiver. Are we going to like all of a sudden go out and say Ray McCloud is someone to be excited about? He's their starting slot guy right now. Darnell Mooney, that the guy you want to be your wide receiver too? This is not a particularly good offensive cast. It's not.
It's not like the Vikings.
I don't know about Ray McCloud, but I feel like a lot of these players, they all have very high ceilings. The hint is given that it was very discernible that Arthur Smith was mismanaging utilities of Bijan Robinson, not leaning into him at the right parts of the game, and then therefore translate to what else was he mismanaging that was less obvious. And potentially you have to be more creative in how you're leveraging someone like Kyle Pitts, who is a freak athlete. He's obviously not a traditional tight end. And he can't block, he just gets pushed off the line. You can't use him in that traditional sense. And so I feel like you have to be a little bit more creative. And obviously there was terrible quarterback play. And if you get stability at that quarterback play, plus a layer of creativity, that could unlock a lot. Now, I don't think this is all at the same time. I don't think this is necessarily like an off-market view. There's other people saying this. And so there's not necessarily, I would say, a ton of value.
I think that's exactly the point, is that there are a lot of ifs and a lot of things that haven't actually happened yet.
I would say, because what I think there's exciting is there's a high ceilings, but also high floor.
I agree with the high ceiling. I don't agree with the high floor. What if Kyle Pitts and Drake London were what they were in the past 2 years? What if it wasn't Arthur Smith? What happens then? All of a sudden, like it's like Kirk Cousins with like...
confident that it was.
Again, I see... Yeah, that's fair. I just like... The idea that it is possible that maybe Arthur Smith wasn't the problem.
But it's also not just Arthur Smith. It's also a product of bad quarterback play. So if you can just bring stability to the quarterback position in itself,
sure,
will at least provide a better platform for...
I'm not saying that is a reasonable argument. There also exists a world of possibility where like all of those, what I'll call excuses for the sake of this argument, are just excuses. There's a world of possibility where these guys aren't as good as their production.
Let's ask these questions, because from a division perspective, assuming Cousins is healthy, best quarterback, best offensive line, best backfield, best defense?
I'm disappointed by the headline driving defensive signings, because I feel like that is just like eating up any lingering value in betting this team, at least preseason.
Yeah,
They definitely have way more talent.
Yeah. So, all right. So I think just from what we do know, they're the most talented team probably in the division overall, and especially in some key spots. And so it comes down to the coaching. That's where I'm going to be keying on, at least in season, is seeing how the coaching plays out.
I understand the frame, and I think it's fair to say that the talent matters, and it does. There's a reason why they're division favorites, but it's a lot more fragile. Hmm. The talent is not so far beyond anyone else. The Niners, right? This isn't
for sure.
A team that is so built up and down, like defenses are unstable. A lot of veterans on this team, a lot of guys who can fall off very quick. And like Raheem Morris did an incredible job in LA on their defensive side. He seems to be a good coach, and all signs point to them being a fine team. But like there are a lot more fragile points on this team, namely their secondary weapons are atrocious, and we have no idea how good their primary weapons really are. There's a lot of guesswork being.
Yeah,
and you look at the playoffs -180. That's sick.
Cousins says he's going to be ready for the season, but you're down and out for months after that Achilles tear. Is he just going to pick right back up where he left off regardless? As far as
I'm... Like, I'm not, like, so worried about that. Like, it's not like he's, like, a mobile...
It doesn't matter. It's, you still need to plant. You still need to, like...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Just comfortability.
Use your legs, or the worst possible injury you could have as an athlete, effectively.
So what's, like, the most recent comp?
Who's torn an Achilles besides Rodgers last year? What about Penix? I always want to say penis.
You would. I knew it was.
My brain is dirty. La porta potty. But for Penix, I like Penix better. It's more fun. Show me the Penix. If he does have to supplant Kirk for any reason, whether injury or otherwise, do we think he can be a rookie that can step in and with these pieces put it together for a surprise upside season?
You're the vibes guy. What are the vibes saying?
I don't know Penix that well.
Just a little well.
Just a little. I know Penix is a little bit.
No, but because, again, expectations are so skewed to the upside, like, the value's been completely extracted and then some. Again, minus 180 to make the playoffs. Like, this is, like, a surefire slam dunk that this team is going to be a top three, top four team in the NFC.
I will say, though, you know...
If I feel like every single thing that Judah was talking about potential downside, I would say alts here, under 5.5 plus 920.
That's a big one. That's an injury. It's an injury season.
But that's just one injury problem.
Not an injury season.
No.
Start off poorly, pull a plug, let's see what Penix is.
See, 920? See that?
Wait, hold on. How would they pull the plug on Cousins if they start bad? Haven't they, isn't he guaranteed like $40 million?
Ooh, that fatty.
What?
This is like one of the fattest curves right here between essentially these overs being so juiced out the ass. So the over 8.5, over 9, 9.5. Again, it's just another proxy. The market's just piling into upside on the Falcons. There is no value left to be had.
Under 8.5 looks pretty valuable.
Yeah. I'm going under 6.5. My bet for this team, my entertainment bet, is under 6.5, which is pretty juicy. Was plus 520.
Oh wow, that's pretty big.
I don't think this is an entertainment bet. I like the under 7.5 here.
Yeah, I'll do under
plus
8.
+210.
I'll do under 8.5.
At 310.
Plus 8.5, 225. I think you could actually just ladder down into these.
Yeah.
Because the downside scenario is really, it's not like me.
Maybe.
I don't think so. I think Kirk Cousins can be like fine. That Drake London and Kyle Pitts are
fine. That's not a downside.
The defense is stable. They are like a mediocre to below average offense. They can still pull out 6-7 wins, especially when they're playing Panthers and Saints four times.
Well,
yeah, also, yeah, but that's I'm saying the downside is extreme downside. I don't think there is moderate downside. So
I'm saying,
so the downside being something like, again, Kirk Cousins gets pulled or he gets hurt or he's not the same Kirk Cousins, like this scenario. And then all the things that you talked about, were these players, do they actually have upside potential or are they just not that good? And it's just all smoke and mirrors. And it wasn't the bad quarterback play or the unstable quarterback play or Arthur Smith. That scenario, I feel like produces under 5.5.
Well, I'll give you some ammo to justify that. I think you're on to something. Play maybe the under 5.5, assuming there's alts still available as the season progresses. The top half of their schedule is a little tougher than the latter half. So they could very easily start 0-3 or 1-4. And then their schedule gets a lot softer. You might get a price drop to 8.5, 7.5 if you want to bet that all under now. You might get a better price on an over 3-4 games.
You can also just bet against them in the first 3 weeks.
That could be too, yeah.
I wouldn't go so far as to say this is like a threshold. If it goes really poorly, it's going to go super poorly. I think there are a lot of outcome spaces of them falling below expectation and not looking like a complete train wreck. And we misjudged the initial expectation. And I think that stems from misjudging how good this offensive supporting cast really is. And we have this conversation next year, and instead of, Kyle Pitts has this untapped potential, Drake London has this untapped potential, it's here are these guys who turned out to just be fine, solid, enough.
And maybe it was a product of Arthur Smith's style of utilizing him, but Is there a world Bijan is a Reggie Bush type player, right? Like super hyped, super amazing in college, comes in, can be amazing at times, but is also inefficient consistently. And if that happens and they want to give him the ball nonstop, that can be a problem. Because in fantasy, everybody loves him in fantasy. So, you know, he's hyped to the tilt.
Yeah. All right. So in summary for NFC South, most attractive upside to the team that everyone hates the most, which just from a narrative perspective is liking upside for Panthers. I would like to play other bets. I'll have to look into other proxies of how Bryce Young can surprise everyone, even their own fans, has completely written him off. And there's just so much change that just really provides a potential springboard for upside surprise.
And just for context of that, Goff was god-awful his rookie season. He only played like the latter half with Jeff Fisher. The offense scored 13 points. Sean McVay came in. They were the highest scoring offense the next year. There is some minor precedent in recent history where a big transformation is.
That's fair because, again, Goff that year did look like one of the worst quarterbacks ever.
Yeah. Looked like a bust.
He looked unsalvageable.
Yeah.
Again, something we talked about in the past seasons, bringing in a wide receiver that has, which is a meaningful delta from at least what they had, to potentially unlock some value from a very young and still malleable talent.
Yeah, I think EPA is an extremely flawed staff, but I don't think we understand just how bad Bryce Young was last year. This is among 208 quarterbacks of the last 6 years, the seventh worst quarterback season by EPA. This is really bad. Jared Goff's rookie year was bad. It was not even close to as bad as
it felt bad.
It felt bad. Exactly.
It felt
as bad. But from a data perspective, it wasn't. And that's important to keep
which
in mind.
Which actually makes it even more attractive to me. Because that is the baseline consensus view. So there's no edge.
100%. I think it's like a matter of the gap between going from a really bad 30th a 15th is very different than a really bad 32nd, because like that same delta, say in EPA terms of 0.1 for a 30th best quarterback, because it's more condensed there, is going to take you to 15. And you're at 32 and you're that bad, it's going to take you to 27. That's the only kind of frame of mind I would have in understanding the base rate. And again, I don't think EPA is the truth here. I think it's just a useful kind of metric.
Quick question on that. How many games in do you think we need to see from Bryce to get a general pulse of just directionally where we think he might head the rest of the season? Is it a couple games? Four games?
Like three or four games. And you'll even see how they structure the offense.
I think you need to give him a good leash because it's still a whole new system, situation. You need to start to see at least some
flashes, right?
Improvement. Yeah. But I think you did see some of that last year. Again, and this is just my own anecdotal experience.
One game. One game against the Packers, and then they got shut out the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, but also versus the Bucks. I'm not saying he played well.
Yeah.
But really, the only reason the Bucks won and covered that game was because essentially Bryce Young threw a 50-yard touchdown. And then the dude fumbled it in the end zone. And it was like the luckiest play ever.
I was live betting Bryce in the Panthers that game.
All of which is to say, it's those types of things that I don't fully register that is captured by EDP. And again, that's why from an EDP perspective, a lot of those stats that we were citing showed that the Panthers weren't as bad as consensus expectations are being priced at. And then in summary, Bucks, Saints, not too much. We love there really from an upside or downside perspective. And then some downside tail scenarios for Falcons.
Looking back at the conclusion of fruitful discussion is the NFC South is really a question of how good is Bryce Young.
Is Bryce Young. Yeah.
That's what we've been talking about for most of this podcast.
I feel like there's so much more profit potential to getting upside on something that people think is definitely not going to happen than fading something that everyone thinks for sure is going to happen. And so there's like less money to be made fading, say, the favorite Falcons, and more money to potentially be made buying the sell-off in Panthers. All right, let's close it there. That's closing bell. See you next time.